Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Today we're going to talk about some problems farmers are facing and some opportunities farmers might be able to take advantage of. We're going to chat about how one farmer dealt with the volatile mix of stressors that agriculture produces every day and how he found his way out of the labyrinth. And we're going to get a markets update on the situation here in the very middle of the harvest period. But first, let's tackle the challenge that's facing so many farmers right now. That's soaked fields and, for many, a blanket of snow. These are creating a harvest nightmare in many areas. Brian Cross of the Western Producer has been following this evolving story, and he joins me now. Hello, Brian, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Ed. Thanks a lot.
So we saw a lot on Twitter. We heard a lot on the radio and TV about this snowstorm and all the rain we've had recently. How big a deal is this bad weather we've had?
Yeah, I'd say it's a very big deal. In addition to just general delay in harvest progress, lots of downgraded grain, lots of grain going on to aeration, lots of grain requiring drying. And with the recent snowfall across a lot of Alberta and southern Saskatchewan, a lot of crop that was out is now covered in snow and prone to more degrading.
And, you know, I mean, it's getting colder. It's obviously getting deeper into the fall. How much time are farmers going to need for this to dry out so that they can get back out there and get this crop in?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Ed. I think that's what every farmer is wondering. The first thing that's got to happen is we got to get some dry weather, some sunshine, hopefully some wind, and we got to keep the rains away. The days are obviously getting shorter, so at this time of year, I would say growers are going to be lucky to get their machines started much before noon. And if there's not a wind up in the evening, they're going to be shutting down as soon as the sun goes down. So their days are significantly shortened already, and from here on in, any additional moisture is just going to delay things. There's a lot of crop out, and depending on which part of the prairies you're talking about, some places there's as much as 75% of the crop still out. Other areas it might be down to half or a bit less. The majority of what's out in Saskatchewan, I think, at this point is canola, which is a pretty resilient crop. It dries up quite a bit faster than cereals and is less prone to damage. So if we could get a couple of weeks of consistently good sunny weather, that would clean up quite a bit of it. But the big question is, are we going to get it?
Yeah, it's a race against time now.
Yeah.
So how is this affecting the rest of the grain industry?
Well, I don't know exactly how it's going to affect every aspect of the industry, but I guess one of the most visible effects of the bad weather is less grain is flowing through the export pipeline. Deliveries to elevators has been really slow, at least until this bad weather. Farmers have been focusing on their field work. With the bad weather that's come over the past week or two, farmers have had an opportunity to haul a little bit of grain to delivery points. But in general, there's not much grain moving, or at least there hasn't been until just recently. So it's going to push deliveries and export channels further back into the crop year. And as we approach winter, of course, it's more difficult to get all that product moved in the cold weather. So in addition to that, it's a cash flow issue. I think farmers need to move some grain at this time of year. They need always need to get some cash flow moving to pay their bills and to do what's got to be done. So, it's just compounding a lot of factors and adding a lot of stress.
Yeah, it looks like we're set up for a pretty tense October and November.
For sure that.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Brian.
Yeah, no problem, Ed.
Brian Cross is a reporter with the Western Producer. This is Between the Rows. Now to an area that's a little happier for crop-growing farmers. There's a plant protein craze raging across the developed world right now, and Canadian farmers are ideally situated to take advantage of it. They've spent decades funding research into pulse, canola, and cereal protein, and all of a sudden, the world seems interested. Manitoba just held its inaugural protein summit, and it's something both I and Alexis Stockford of the Manitoba Cooperator covered. Alexis joins me now to chat about the Manitoba Protein Summit. Hello, Alexis, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Ed. It's great to be here.
So, you know, Alexis, it's pretty safe to say there's like a lot of talk and a lot of chatter about plant protein these days. What is your sense of, I guess, in farm country, how much talk there is about this?
I mean, you're absolutely right. There is a ton of conversation about plant protein, specifically with some advancements that we've seen coming into the province, like, you know, with, of course, Roquette, who we've been talking about for a number of years, putting up their plant down by Portage la Prairie, but also Merit, which is a little closer to Winnipeg, looking at canola protein and that sort of thing. And so there are a number of industries that are coming into the Manitoba egg sector or agribusiness. And you're right, that is absolutely driving the conversation and driving a lot of excitement for those that are growing these crops. Just because they're seeing very tangible evidence of where their product could end up in the market.
Yeah, I was really impressed at the Protein Summit. I mean, there were a real good mix of people there, from venture capitalists to people that are processing to companies that have been doing, you know, dealing with our commodities for a century, like Warburton's from the UK. To farm groups, to all sorts of people very interested in this area. What sense do you have of how deep the trend towards plant protein is running out there, I guess, in society in general?
I think that that's a really difficult question to answer, really, because, like, I think it is important to note that at this point, when we talk about the protein summit that we were both at, I think it is important to note that it was looking at protein as a whole. So although plant-based protein was certainly part of that conversation, the animal-based protein was also an equal part of that conversation. And so I think it is important to point out that when Manitoba is looking at this strategy, they are trying to keep it very two-pronged, and so the livestock guys and girls are not being ignored in this at all. But more to your question, in terms of, you know, consumer trends or the trends that we're seeing right now, I think it's really hard to gauge, because you do see reluctance on the side of the animal protein industry to kind of give up any ground. And so I think one of the main challenges that's coming down the pipe is you've got the province, which is trying to take this two-pronged strategy, and you're hearing a lot of conversation around plant-based protein and a lot of excitement around plant-based protein. But at the same time, you've got this livestock industry and this meat industry that is maybe feeling a little threatened by this, and at the same time trying to take advantage of the things in the protein strategy that do apply to them. And so, like, I think a big part of this conversation is going to be trying to, I guess, find a middle ground, or trying to find a way of communication between these two sectors that is less adversarial than I think it is right now.
And for, you know, the farm groups and other people, the universities and Agriculture Canada, other people that have put a lot of time and effort and money into developing our understanding of not just what plant protein can do, but also how to extract it and how to process it and use it. Where do you think now they'll see the rest of the food industry, I guess, pick up the potential and the opportunities? Where does this go from here? There's a lot of talk. Where does this actually end up on the shelves, other than in the, you know, Beyond Meat burgers that we hear so much about?
I think that's a good point. And if you look at some of our previous coverage of the protein strategy, the actors that are involved in developing the plant-based protein, they admit that, you know, there's a lot of development that needs to happen in order to realize the potential that they're talking about right now. I do see a just sort of a, I guess, explosion of interest in novel products, but also in blended products. Like one of the people that I'm sure you remember hearing, one of the presenters who is looking to launch a ground beef substitute that is a blend between beef and plant-based protein, and that being one product, and he's looking at adding others to his lineup further down the line. And I think we are starting to see more of those products for people who are wanting to have their cake and eat it too, so to speak, who are buying into this plant-based protein craze or trend, but aren't necessarily wanting to give up on meat either.
You know, we're also talking about the consumer here, and everyone in that room, it wasn't consumers. I mean, although everybody does consume, these people in that room were everybody sort of except consumer-focused people. They're people who are providing things for consumers, and trying to figure out that consumer, it can be quite a challenge. And I'm thinking in terms of diet trends and food trends. I mean, in recent years, we've been talking about gluten-free. We heard so much about that. Vegan. Low carb, widespread, flexitarian is all the chatter now. And then almost everybody you run into, or every other person you run into, says they're on a keto diet these days. So it seems like a very challenging thing to try to figure out who the consumer is these days. Did you think much about that after being at this event, about how we keep talking about the consumer, but how in fact that consumer is a pretty many-headed beast?
Yeah, I did. And I think one of the challenges is that, we are looking, like, in a lot of cases, when you're thinking about the consumer, you're thinking about, the people that you yourself see on Facebook, or the people that you yourself see on Twitter, what are the trends that they're expressing in their diet? And I know for me, like, I'm a person that actually does a lot of cooking, right? So I belong to some of the social media groups that are not necessarily limited to just the rural audience, but have a much broader spectrum. And so through that, you see, some perspectives from the urban audience and from the urban consumer. And you are seeing, or at least I have been seeing anecdotally, that this idea of reducing meat, or this idea of increasing plant-based protein, it does have a foothold in that consumer market. But at the same time, I think we have to, I guess, muddy the waters. I don't know necessarily how accurate that is, because if you look at the reality of what our market is, a lot of our market is driven by export, right? So what I'm seeing anecdotally, and what everyone sees sort of anecdotally in terms of food trends here, I don't know how well that actually reflects the reality of the situation, when the consumer that we're actually creating our product for, in a lot of cases, is not in Manitoba. They're in China, they're in Japan, they're elsewhere in the world, you know?
Yeah, I guess it always raises that question of, in the end, how much of this really affects substantially the millions of tons of these crops that we produce. These make great stories, but I guess figuring out how many of these opportunities are going to be something that really brings more money home to the farm gate, and how many is mostly just an interesting story, something that we're going to have to see develop over the next few years?
I think that's one of the reasons why so much focus on the protein strategy has been about drawing industry into Manitoba. And, like, yeah, granted, a lot of that is an attempt to jumpstart local industry, but also an equal part of that is also attempting to draw in more companies like, Roquette, which is global, and trying to draw in more of those large scale industries. I think that's part of the, like, a big part of what we're seeing right now in the strategy.
Well, it's an interesting area, and I'm sure you and I will be occupied over the next few years covering every wrinkle of this. So thanks very much today, Alexis, for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely, Ed. It's always a pleasure.
Alexis Stockford is a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator. When farmers face a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety on the farm, even depression, it can seem like a long journey into darkness and night, and a long journey out. But as we're going to hear with this interview that Laura Rantz did with Jerry Friesen, maybe the metaphor of a journey, like a straight line, is not the most accurate way to think of the situation.
Jerry, you talked about your journey, your mental health journey, as being a labyrinth as opposed to a linear journey.
Right.
And I wondered if you'd elaborate on that, because I think a lot of people think you're sick, you get healed, you get help, it's going to be fine. And it's not, it doesn't work that way for people.
No, it certainly doesn't. And that's, I think what people have to be aware of is that it's not linear. You're not going to go to your doctor tomorrow and get antidepressants, for example, and a week from now you're going to be good and life is good. It's up and down. And that's something where you have to be aware of that. But when you're getting up one day and feeling down, don't panic. And I used to do that. I go, oh, shoot, here I go again, right? But then now I'm to the point where I go, okay, today may not be a good day, but I know tomorrow will be.
It's almost like the tidal waves of an ocean. I mean, things come
That's
in.
It's a good analogy.
And they
yes.
roll out again.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And also, I mean, everybody has stress in life, right? And everybody goes through hard times. So some of the stress or these hard times may trigger something. But if we're aware of the fact that it was triggered by the fact that my paycheck didn't come in yesterday, if I'm aware of that, then I know it's not going to drag me down for the next however long.
So part of it is understanding what's going to trigger.
Yes, yes.
When you talk about the things that make it hard for people to talk about mental health in the community, one of the questions I had was this pressure in agriculture to always be getting bigger and buying more land. Is there a fear among farmers that if they talk about it, they're going to be seen as weak and therefore
yes.
someone that they can pick off?
The short, simple answer is absolutely. And so farmers don't want to show that, both with how their own farm is being managed. They don't want to show weakness. Because farming, at the end of the day, let's face it, there's competition. It may be friendly competition, but at the end of the day, and I remember when we got this forward contracting program at Manitoba Pork, I would forward contract pigs, and then I would hear of someone that forward contracted pigs for a higher price. I wouldn't talk about mine. Because I felt ashamed, I felt, you know what, I can't do this. And so there's all these things that impact the way you think.
How do we move past that as a rural community, where historically people have always been there for each other? How do you get over that sense that if people know that I'm vulnerable, that I might lose my farm even faster?
You know, I did something years ago, and I can't remember these years, but there was this hog rally in Morris, and I got up to speak, and there was 700 people there, I think, and I asked every hog farmer in the room to get up, and then when everybody, all the hog farmers had gotten up, I said, now shake hands with someone near you, and I said, you've just shaken hands with someone that's going through the exact same thing. So, you know what? People that I think are the most successful in life, when I really start chatting with them, I find out they're going through the same stuff I am. In a different way, perhaps, but hey, we all experience the same thing.
Yeah. You've been on this journey, consciously on this journey, for over a decade now.
Good, you bet.
What's changed for you in this?
What has changed? I think it can best be summed up in I now have a full I can always learn more, but I have a really deep understanding of who I am and why this stuff is happening to me, both mentally and emotionally, and know where I can find ways to be better at what I do. And I talked about the dopamine thing, for example. My wife sometimes thinks I have OCD, but when I do something, I'll do it every day. And so the naturopath said, you need protein within an hour of getting up in the morning. Oh, sorry, I didn't provide the background there. In the mornings, first 2 hours of every day, my wife wouldn't talk to me, and I didn't want her to. I was a bear, and I was angry. And so the naturopath said, you need protein. So for the last year and almost a half, I've had a protein shake every morning when I get up. I have coffee with my wife whenever she's home.
I'll get down on the floor with my grandkids, which I could never do with my own kids. So there's these things that, if they help, keep doing them. Not like I did with my first round of medication where I thought, oh, I'm good, go off medication, right? So we have to keep doing these things.
And you mentioned sometimes you didn't get the answers you needed from professionals, but you kept looking. You kept talking to people and kept looking.
And that's where I have to be very thankful for my family, because they pushed me that way. Instead of them giving up on me too, they pushed me. So,
as far as the big picture in agriculture, you said that farming has become a lot more controllable choices for farmers, but not necessarily making it easier from a mental health management perspective.
No, and again, we can delve deeper into that, Laura. I mean, not everybody that makes a wrong decision now is close to the edge, right? We all have different ways of dealing with things and being able to cope with things. But when there are certain things happening in life, and for me it was when the bank started calling me, then my financial decisions became much bigger, because now it just impacted everything. And so I started making decisions based on all the wrong reasons, right? And so, yeah, we just have to be aware. And we shouldn't regret what happened in the past. Rather, we need to learn from that and move on.
And we sort of second-guess ourselves.
Like, always.
It's human nature just to, well, yeah. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
You're saying just understand that and move on.
Learn from it. We learn from our experiences.
Do you see things, I mean, people have been talking about this more, there has been studies, there's been research. Do you see signs that things are changing for the better?
Yes.
Generally?
Yes. The short answer is yes, but we have an incredibly long way to go. And that's why I was really encouraged with this advisory committee meeting I was at Thursday, where we talked about this. And so it was interesting because, well, there may have been one or two others, but talking about what we would like to see come out of this, right? Out of what they're doing now with this. They did an exercise where they said, pick, what headline would you like to see? And I said, the number one headline I'd like to see is farmers tough enough to talk about it. And people said, well, we want this and we want... I said, absolutely. But first and foremost, we need to get guys, everybody talking.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Laura Rantz of Glacier Farm Media talking to Jerry Friesen. Now, an update on the markets. I'm joined by Glenn Halleck of Markets Farm. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Ed.
So, what's the prairie weather doing to the crop markets?
Well, we saw canola on Monday rose by $5. As you know, farmers are very far behind in the harvest. In Manitoba, they're about 40%. Saskatchewan and Alberta, they're roughly 30-35% done. Things aren't going that great. You know, this recent snow, Alberta had between, 30 to 95 centimeters of snow, depending where you were.
Yeah, it's quite a thing to hit a crop that is waiting to get taken off.
Oh, yeah. The quality is going down day by day.
Yeah, so what's bad for the crop, good for prices.
If they can get it off.
So what is the USDA saying about the state of grain stocks out there? That's the underlying story for the marketing winter. Where are we at?
Okay, the markets thought that there would be a lot more soybeans and, to a lesser extent, corn out there on the farms and in the commercial pipeline. But when the USDA came out with their grain stocks report, there wasn't quite the soybeans that everybody thought. Markets were thinking about 980 million bushels. No, the USDA says about 913 million. Corn, you know, the markets were looking at around 2.4 billion bushels. It came in about 2.1 billion. The amount of the crops just aren't out there, I guess, as the markets think there are.
What do you think the big factor is behind that? Well, why is it less than we thought?
Well, I think a big factor was this spring. It was a lot of wet conditions throughout the Corn Belt, the U.S. Midwest, just delayed everything. And, you know, we even see here in Canada, things are behind pace. You know, in the U.S., they've had their struggles too.
Yeah, so I guess the trade and traders have been thinking there's more out there, despite that,
yes,
than USDA based on its information. So I guess we're going to see who's right, right? The
trade
or the USDA?
I think in the end, eventually, it's going to be the USDA.
Yeah, well, for price-wise reasons, let's hope so.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always talk about China and Trump. What's going on with these battling tots right now?
Well, the U.S. and China are going to get together yet again next week on Thursday and Friday for another round of trade talks. Between now and then, we'll see what happens. China's been buying, you know, 600,000 tons of soybeans here, 1 million tons there. You know, they do that just before there's another round of talks, just to try and maybe help smooth things over with the U.S. Big wild card, Trump. What is he going to tweet between today and October 10th? It may have talks start off on a good foot. It may sour everything, like the last time they were there in Washington, where they had a deal, but it fell apart.
Yeah, trading off tweets has got to be a sort of unique challenge, I think, for today's traders.
Oh, it's Trump tweets something and quite quickly the price will go up or it will go down just as fast.
Yeah, it's amazing how people are still taking the tweets seriously, considering how they turn 180 degrees in less than a day often.
Some traders are becoming a little bit skeptical. They'll hold off to what they see, you know, coming from Trump's Twitter account and see what the markets do elsewhere before, you know, settling in on something.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Glenn.
Well, thanks, Ed.
Glenn Halleck is a reporter with Markets Farm. That's all for today. Join us again next week for another edition of Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, and I wish you all the best as you work through harvest.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.